This is Pat Lynch, and you are listening and watching the Career Pathways podcast, coming to you from the luxurious Kilt Studios deep in the basement of the Mabee Simpson Library. I'll get to our guests in a moment, but joining me behind the board, behind the magic board, is
producer Jason.
Yeah, as always, well, he's back from France.
Yep,
and
France.
And he's still sporting that mustache.
I thought about shaving it, but
don't. Please don't. It makes you very European, as they would say. So yeah, it's all good. And also joining us today is one of our new faculty members, Matthew Thompson, assistant professor of chemistry. Am I correct?
Yes, you are correct.
We're starting a new season off on a bang. I think I was about 4 out of 10 where I would have everybody's title correct, you know?
Yeah, it was bad when it was actually the real professor.
Yeah, it was pretty.
Because you never know if somebody's an associate, a professor,
yeah,
an assistant.
It was always an epic fail, but, I guess we're, as new faculty members, we're compadres in that way. Now, Matthew, to his credit, we have a tradition here at Lyon where we new faculty members join all of our new students in a raft race across Bryan Lake, where you get to put a raft together with nothing but cardboard and duct tape. And so he smartly was the consultant on the project, and I unfortunately was one of the sailors or co-pilots, and it didn't end well.
It was a disaster.
It didn't immediately sink. We can claim
wow.
that.
It did not. It did absolutely the absolute worst thing that could happen. It got to the middle of the lake.
Oh, and then it fell.
It fell apart.
Oh,
it completely disintegrated.
How was that? Were you fearing for your life? No,
yeah, it was just, and then you have to try to swim to shore with this big soggy piece of cardboard. But it was good. Yeah, it was. Welcome to the Career Pathways podcast.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Oh yeah, this is great. We always start with kind of a tell me about yourself. Kind of learn a little bit more about you, like where you're from, where you went to school, kind of how you ended up here at Lyon.
Sure. So, as you said, my name is Matthew Thompson. I'm originally from central Mississippi around the Jackson area, but I actually came up to Arkansas for college. So I went to Harding University over in Searcy, so just down the road.
Right.
And then I finished there and started grad school in Little Rock, Arkansas at UAMS, the University of Arkansas for Medical Sciences. And then now I'm here. So I was, looking for a job at more smaller teaching focused institutions, and Lyon was a great fit. So.
Perfect. Yeah. And so, your major and field of study always was chemistry?
Actually, no. It's
all
kind
right.
of so. Yeah, this is a good pathways thing.
Yeah.
So, I majored in molecular and cellular biology with a minor in computer science. So I knew I didn't want to go to med school per se, but I really liked, really small things like get some pond water under a microscope, algae, things like that. Like I wanted to know how in the world does that work? Like, what are they thinking anything? What are they doing? You know, how do they know where their food is?
Yeah.
And so I started off doing that, and in high school, I was on a robotics team and I was the programmer. I learned that mechanical engineering is not for me, So I wanted to do something with computer science. And so you can put those together and go from there.
Using computer science, so you start doing like simulations, modeling, kind of do iterations to help you in the lab, or how does that all work?
Right. So that's some part of it. Most of what I do, so in my graduate training, I tried to find a lab that let me do more, we call it wet lab, like in the lab, working with beakers and flasks and pH meters and stuff. And then dry lab is what we call, sitting on the computer. And so I found a really cool combination where I specialized in studying where proteins like to bind in the genome. So your genome is, your DNA made up of A, T, C, G bases. And so there are certain proteins that will bind specific sequences. So say GGGGCC. And so there are these really cool technologies coming out all the time that help you determine exactly where those are binding.
Mm-hmm.
But they come with caveats. So you have to be able to say, like, I would do the experiment myself, get some data, and then compare it back to what I thought I should get.
Right.
And so you use the computer analysis there to do just a lot of the like high throughput signal processing all at once.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you could do it manually. It would just take a very long time.
Which I'm sure it was done some years ago.
Yes.
So where, with all this research, where does that lead as far as that? 'Cause there's like pure research for itself, and then there's a applied research.
Yeah.
And so you focus more in the pure research area.
Yeah, this was definitely a lot more basic research.
Basic, yes.
So one half of my project was studying these DNA structures called G quadruplexes.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a sequence of GGG and then a space and then GGG and then a space and then GGG and a space and GGG, so a lot of runs of Gs, it can form this DNA knot.
Right.
And so we want to try to figure out where those are in the genome, not only where they could fold, because we could just look at the sequence and say, oh, there's a lot of Gs. This algorithm will tell us this will probably fold. But we have to be able to know where those do actually fold in a given cell, in a cancer cell, things like that. And so at UAMS, actually, leveraging some of my network, some of my committee members, what their lab does is they design drugs that can bind these DNA knots and mm-hmm. hold them closed in order to turn off and turn on genes.
Right.
So in a sense, they can make cancer cells more sensitive to chemotherapeutics, things right. like that. But we have to know where these are to know what effect we'll have when we turn them on and turn them off.
And in that research, was there any particular type of cancer that you were looking at?
This was the applied question wasn't actually my research.
Yes.
But in when they were applying it, they were looking at in lymphoma,
mm-hmm.
Diffuse large B cell lymphoma specifically.
Mm-hmm.
But my project was more sort of doing the basic work so that eventually a group like them could take that and apply it.
You know, with the genomes and DNA, how much do we really know at this point in time? I mean, is it still just in its infancy in terms of human understanding of where that is, or is it a lot further along than I'm describing it?
That's a great question. So it depends on what information you're trying to get out of it.
Right.
So if you just want the raw sequence, I think we now have, as of maybe 2 years ago, have finally finished the sequence of the human Y chromosome. And so with that, I think lacking maybe some spots on the X chromosome, we have what the sequence is from end to end for each chromosome.
Mm-hmm.
The problem there is if the DNA gets really repetitive, if it's just AC, 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 AC for like millions of bases, it's really hard for the algorithms to know how many ACs there are. 'Cause to work on all of this, you break it apart into tiny pieces and then put it back together like a jigsaw puzzle.
Right.
And so whenever there's all these pieces and gaps, it's hard to know exactly how long. So as far as what actual sequences there, we're getting pretty close to knowing for a given chromosome what's there. But that only applies to these representative cells or the person who, say, donated their DNA through a saliva test.
Right.
So there's another project that's just starting called the Human Pan Genome Project, so that we can say we can know what sequence your gene for determining your one of your taste buds
sure.
says compared yeah. to my gene for determining a taste bud, because right. we still don't know what's natural variation, things like that. So there's still a lot to learn, and this is just at the sequence level.
Right.
So then there's what does the sequence actually do? That's another question.
Yeah.
And so there's so many layers of all of that.
And when you study this, is this just cells under a microscope, or I'm always thinking, when I hear, ACACAC that I'm thinking just that it's like mathematic equation, which I'm sure it isn't to a degree, but is this actually viewing particular like cell or sequences of cells?
So what we do is you'll take cells. So this could be, say, a biopsy from that a cancer patient receives. This could be, we have cell lines, they're immortalized cells. Mm-hmm. So these were taken from individuals and will grow forever. So one famous cell line that you may have heard of are called HeLa cells. Mm-hmm. They're from an individual named Henrietta Lacks. That's a whole other sort of ethical conundrum at times. So we can take these specific cells and we extract the DNA from them. So we break apart the cell itself. And so we just have these long strands of DNA in a test tube. Then we can prepare them and process them in such a way that we can load them into a machine. And then the machine will sequence them and output a file that just says ACACAC.
Right.
So it's a combination of, we do have to start with living material and process the DNA and deal with the chemistry of that. And then at the other end, we get what the machine spits back out.
So coming into Lion, what are the areas of research that you plan to pursue while you're here? I'm not trying to commit you and everything, but I'm sure that you have interests, you know, carrying forward probably what you did your thesis on and then go from there.
Yeah. So the part of my graduate research that I did with those DNA structures, mm-hmm. that I'm not necessarily planning on immediately continuing, but the other half of my research I'm continuing in spirit. So yeah. The other half of my research is studying these enzymes called helicases. They're the enzymes that unwind the DNA double helix into mm-hmm. two separate strands. And so, for example, in the human genome, there are more than 90 of them, where 60 of them unwind RNA, and I think so it's somewhere around 30 of them unwind DNA. And so if they all share the same function of unwinding DNA, what makes them different? What is their actual role in a given biological process? What is the chemistry that makes them work this way versus the other next helicase?
Right.
So I'm taking that basic helicase enzymology is the fancy field. I'm going to take that and study a helicase in bacteria that is responsible for how bacteria can transfer genes between one another.
Mm-hmm.
So say if this bacterium has a gene that gives it resistance to penicillin, it can pass that DNA along to another bacterial cell who now also has that resistance. And in that whole complicated process, there is a helicase. And so we'll study that. And it sort of pairs a lot well with Dr. Arosha's research.
Yes.
She does things with rifamycin. And Dr. Ju as well is planning on doing some things with, I think, antibacterial materials at some point. So we kind of have antibiotics type of theme going on.
Oh, perfect. And then there's a lot of synergy. And,
exactly.
And I know that we have that research mixer coming up that is your hope to kind of generate student interest to be part of research that you would be working on?
Yeah, that's my plan. And I'm still working on, you know, getting supplies, getting things set up.
Yeah.
So we'll have to see exactly when I have time to fully start working hands-on with students. But that's the goal, is to have a very student-centered and feasible project. So these types of experiments with bacteria are very forgiving time-wise.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say spend maybe 30 minutes or 45 minutes one day, set something up and just leave it overnight. And then whenever you get back to it the next day, you just have to work with it for maybe 30 more minutes. Whereas a lot of the things I did in graduate school, you know, it'll be like a week long process.
Yeah.
And so this project, I'm excited because I get to, let students directly own their project and learn all those tasks. And these are super transferable skills too, like working with bacteria. You could use that to be a clinical microbiologist. You could use that to do more research, things like that. So,
Yeah, the with doing research, what percent just as far as discovery comes by accident?
That's a great question.
Because it always seems so, you know, when I listen to you, it's like everything just deliberate, and it's like,
yeah, right.
But then I imagine the breakthroughs and all these interesting things just come from something unexpected.
Yes, exactly. I guess, yeah, that's a great question. And the reality is, most in academic research, like, most things you will try will not work.
Right.
And so your job as a scientific writer after that is to construct that pathway of meaning through an academic paper. Like, oh, mm-hmm. we thought this, we started here. The experiments presented in a paper may have been done totally out of order. And you right. go back and say, oh, well, if we pretend we started here.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it's very much, let's try this thing. Oh, that didn't work. Okay, go back to this. Go back to the drawing board. Let's try this. Oh, that kind of worked. Okay, so you get like a branching tree structure. And so, yeah, it really, you have to spend the time to try things, but where you'll actually end up, unless you have a super well-defined, super well-planned project with a ton of preliminary data, yeah. you don't actually know.
Love it.
What about penicillin? That's the yeah. one I think. Yes. Of, like, wasn't that found by accident?
Yes, that was an accident as well. I think he just left bacteria on the bench or something and it got contaminated with mold. And yeah, the mold just made an antibiotic.
And
yeah.
that was like the... That was like a big breakthrough because yes. started like all the vaccine work. Pretty
exactly.
Much.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like the start of antibiotics, all sorts of things. So yeah, it's a lot of it. Yeah. I guess a lot of breakthroughs in a sense either come from a ton of careful planning or, you know, they can start with an accident.
Right.
Where exactly that line is and how often that happens, it probably really depends on like your line of research as yeah. well.
You know, talking with you, it seems that the being in research was something that's probably been with you for a very long time. Like I, you know, you got a English major behind the board, a business major, you know, here at the mic, and I never had one moment where I ever was going to be a researcher, but it just seems that's you. Has that always been the case that you just knew that there was something that you've, I don't know if it was in middle school or high school, and it was like you found that home and that mm-hmm. was where you knew that's where your career was headed?
Right. Not exactly. I guess I always had just a deep curiosity about whatever.
Yeah.
And so I go through phases. If you in high school, I really wanted to major in linguistics, specifically like okay. historical linguistics, because it's fascinating that languages change over time and how we can measure that, learn about that. But that doesn't necessarily have like it's really cool and important in its own sake for the social sciences, humanities, historical mm-hmm. study. But I wanted something slightly more concrete. And so that's sort of where I turned to biology, molecular biology. Mm-hmm. And growing up, both of my parents were veterinarians, actually.
Oh, wow.
And so okay. that probably contributed. I never wanted to be a veterinarian, but why? I just knew.
Why?
It's not. Actually, working with animals can get very messy. Yeah. And. To put it politely, and that's not my yeah. my field of work. So I wasn't really into I guess the problem solving and like deeply learning how an organism works, but yeah. not the actual patient care. Same yeah. thing with I was never interested in medical school. Because I knew that wasn't, I was more interested in the theoretical aspects of, well, how does this work? Why does this work?
No.
And so I never, in hindsight, I didn't major in pure chemistry, but right. I remember in undergrad sometimes thinking like, oh, that would have been fun. Maybe I should have, you know, done that. I sort of just wandered my way through, honestly. Yeah. Like I did one internship after my freshman year of college at a lab at University of Mississippi Medical Center working with algae. And that was fun. And then the next summer I said, well, I think I want to do, you know, something more computer science based. Because I was like, well, maybe I don't like working with my hands that much. Right. And I wasn't really enjoying chemistry lab that much in college, which is funny in hindsight. And I was like, well, I'll go do something computer. So I did a software development internship. And I really liked that, but I missed the fact that I didn't get to apply any of this other cool, like, biology knowledge I was learning. Right. Yeah. There's a meme of this guy with, like, a party hat on at some party, and it's like, oh, they don't know that I know about DNA. Like, and that's how I felt. I was, like, I was working on software to help analysts analyze clinical trial data, but all these gene names and things, I was like, oh, this is so cool. Like, I know what this does, right. But that wasn't my job. My job was, you know, make a principal component analysis plot for me. Okay. And so then I shifted back and did another internship in bioinformatics, which is combining those two. Right. And then sort of shifted everything back and forth, and now I'm here. So I've really just been skirting the line of, well, this sounds interesting today. I'll try that.
Well, it's a curious, you know, a high level of curiosity.
Yes, that's the main theme.
you know, it's like you being somebody that was very apprehensive about taking chemistry, I think I'm trying to come up with a fancy title that, you know, basically I had a kind of wear depends every day to get through that class. And but you seem so friendly and you're knowledgeable as far as your approach. How do you work with students? Because I'm sure you face this all the time as far as I can't do chemistry. I'm not a scientist. Oh, this is, you know, you're trying to, you know, comfort them and support them and move them along.
Right. So, like, for my current class and my current philosophy, which, you know, may change, but my current philosophy is trying to just emphasize problem solving, but not emphasize strict memorization of resources. So, because that's the part I feel like that chemistry, there is such a steep learning curve. Once you get, you know, I feel like I didn't really, chemistry felt like a random collection of facts until I was maybe in my second or third year of college, because you can't deeply understand, like, why unless you literally get to quantum mechanics. And so I can't, you know, I'm not going to lecture on quantum mechanics in my Chem 105 course or even my biochemistry course, because I don't even know quantum mechanics. But saying, you know, this is the general principle that when you put, say, soap in water, it will clump together because of this specific interaction. That's cool. And that we use that for things like soap or micellar cleansing water that you'll see at the grocery store. So just trying to find real world practical examples and emphasize that problem solving with what you're given. So,
how has that gone so far as teaching the students? Because have they had an exam or a lab yet?
Our first hands-on labs will be this week. Last week we just had some pretests and things like that. But this week we'll have our first biochemistry lab and our first introductory chemistry labs. But we had some quizzes last week and I was grading some homework sets today. So far it's been good. It's fun. It's a lot of work. I'm doing most things like handwritten.
Right.
So yes, it is a lot of work going back through and reading and grading, but I like it because I can, you know, see the gears turning.
Right.
And that's my favorite part is, you know, if the only thing you take from my chemistry class is had to calculate a mole or something when you learn that term. Cool. But what I hope you take is that, you know, all of these observable things in day-to-day life, we know how they work because of these tiny things. Unfortunately, we have to zoom in really small and study these invisible things, but that's the overarching picture.
All right. Outside of Lyon College, you know, as far as academia, what kind of personal interest do you have?
Yeah, I play a lot of random musical instruments. So,
name them. That's the
yeah. I grew up playing trumpet,
right?
And then I taught myself flute, clarinet, and bassoon.
That's it.
And I'm working on oboe.
Oh, God.
Okay. And I used to take piano lessons. I'm not good at piano, right. But you know. So
you read? Yeah.
So I can I can read music and everything.
Perfect.
And,
yeah. I'm in the process of learning piano right now.
Yeah, it's wow. So fun, but it is. So hard.
I just got to the part learning like key functions and like where they are and lettering them and memorizing it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Haven't got to music reading yet.
With yeah. Kind of a scientific mind, does that transfer as far as being able to pick up all the different instruments that you have? Because there's some correlation there, mm-hmm. You know, as far as especially when you read music and being able to follow.
Right. Yeah, it is. It is really like a separate, like a foreign language.
Yeah, yeah.
Learning to read it, learning to recognize it, and if you talk to any music major, they'll tell you music theory is no joke.
Yeah.
There's a joke that like the music majors or the music professors say, "Oh, it's not rocket science," and the physics professors say, "Oh, it's not music theory."
Yeah.
Because it is its own separate little world. I feel like for me, a lot of it. Music for me, music is more my focus on anything else time.
Yeah.
So one thing I've really liked is I know with like Generation Z there's a lot of a lot more focus on like mental health and wellness and things. And I can relate to that. I guess I'm kind of a zillennial is like the term.
All right.
Like the very edge between Gen Z and Millennial. Yeah. And so doing things like wellness things or therapy, like you'll learn all these cool mindfulness techniques that are basically, you know, focus on the moment, focus on your breathing. And I realize in hindsight that music is that for me, right. Because you have to focus on your breathing. You can't think of anything else when you're like in the middle of this really long piece and you need to breathe right now.
Yeah.
And same thing with athletics, same thing with art. And so, yeah, I think... While there's, and I feel like maybe the correlation between, say, like music and the sciences is that we have to have something else to do to keep us sane.
Oh, yeah.
Is my thought.
Well, now, yeah, you know, with, you know, seeing a quartet starting to put together with you and Eric South, you know, he's excellent. Have you ever heard Eric play?
No, what does he play?
Oh, my God. Saxophone.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, excellent.
Doesn't he have a doctorate in music?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
He's fantastic.
Wow. If you go into his office, he has like a huge like diploma. Like it is massive. I don't know if it's on his wall. When I first got here, it was like on the floor and I was like, dude, you need to hang that up. That thing is
crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause you had him for the core 100.
Yeah. It was the hardest course I ever took ever. And well,
you
know,
you
knew
a lot. You found out a lot about stoneflies, I imagine.
Yes, we did. Well, the one big thing I remember from that class is that all seven of the Animalia kingdom are in.
There you go. Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also have a confession too. Is I've never taken a science class here yet at Lyon, so I am probably taking chemistry next semester.
Well, right.
Yeah. Because nice. I need to graduate. You know, that thing has happened. So.
Yep.
But I also. This is also the second confession. I failed chemistry in high school.
Yeah. So,
but that was technically a college chem class, and I took that in like 10th grade during COVID. So it was you know, I was slacking.
It's just interesting because we've had Wesley Perkins, you know, talking about math phobia too, you know.
Yes.
There's certain things that, you know, you just had. There's students that just come in almost convinced, that self-fulfilling prophecy. They're convinced they cannot succeed. And then how do you get them past that? Because you say it's problem solving. It's like, okay, that seems doable.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the thing I think is I'm still learning my own perspective on this, but yeah, it's definitely just trying to emphasize problem solving and using the resources you have. Like later this week, we're going to work on converting units in Chem 105. And my example is sometimes I like to bake occasionally.
Yeah.
And the worst thing, well, it used to be the worst thing, is that sometimes I would find a really cool recipe and I scroll down and everything is in grams.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, you know, all I have are measuring cups. I don't have a food scale. How do I convert grams of this to, I don't know, cups of flour? And so that's like a real world application of this type of problem solving. Yes, we'll be using it for these very specific chemical purposes, but it's the same thing.
Well, yeah, as a business major, I just convinced myself all great chefs don't follow recipes, and I start randomly throwing it in, and usually with pretty terrible results. So.
Yeah, there's a joke that for me, I like baking and I don't like cooking.
Yeah,
because baking, it's very defined. I just follow the exact recipe. Yep. And like, it takes a little bit of skill and practice, but if you just follow the recipe, it's great. But cooking, I'm like, I don't know what to add to this to make it taste better. Right. I don't know.
I'm the opposite, I think. I think because cooking, you have so much more leeway, you know?
Yeah.
Like if I want to make an omelet and I don't want to put this specific, you know, thing in it, I can do that. Like if I don't want pepper in my omelet, I don't know.
Right. There you go. Yeah.
And so I think that's the thing, is trying to teach chemistry is remembering that, yeah, some people don't like baking. Right. And so trying to explain, like, sometimes, unfortunately, we don't have that leeway. Mm-hmm. And to get through, you just have to do this, unfortunately. But
Would you also say that it's like kind of judging a book by its cover too, a little bit? Because like, Shulga was talking about this in our math class that I'm taking with him, and he was saying, like, you know, just because it looks like a really long problem or really difficult doesn't actually mean that it is.
Exactly.
Is that kind of the same thing with chemistry in particular?
Yeah, yeah. You can break every problem down into a ton of tiny problems and then chain them together like a little subway map, and then you'll get there. And so I like that part of it too. So you learn how to pick out the information you need, look up a table of the information you don't have, and then convert from one to the other. And, you know, get to your answer.
Looking at the curriculum that you have, are there any new courses that you're hoping to introduce sometime in the next 2 years here at Line?
Yeah. On my mind recently has been, I think it'd be fun to teach some sort of special topics course on nucleic acid chemistry. So basically the chemistry of how DNA sequencing works, because that it has applications for technology, it has applications for medicine in general, just DNA, things like that. And so diving more into that technical layer is something that I'd love to, you know, get to explore.
Sounds
a little
pretty
bit
foundational as far as, just that's real interesting.
Yeah. And it's interesting. That's a class I guess I wish I would have had in undergrad. In you know, perfect hindsight, it would have been great knowing what I ended up doing.
Right.
But I think it's a really cool example of how you can start from these small basic science facts and then build an entire, you know, DNA sequencing technology and have $1 million company.
Oh yeah. And we always wrap it up with just a thought on careers, you know, that one of the obvious things, and you know, as far as with chemistry majors, would be, you know, kind of the path you took, and so teaching. But what other kind of careers could chemistry majors have?
Right, there's a lot of variety. Here at Lion, especially, there's a great focus and program with like pre-professional health sciences, of course. Mm-hmm. So this fundamental chemistry knowledge can really help prepare you for the MCAT, for medical school, PT school, for dentistry, things like that, just because all of biology does ultimately depend on chemistry. There's that. There's you could do – I have friends who work in clinical testing and sort of diagnostics, so testing consumer products and ensuring quality and things like that. There's – you can do – You could branch out. So there's sciences like geology, or even like atmospheric science and the weather. Mm-hmm. That is a combination of physics and chemistry as well.
Yeah.
And so you could do that. You could, I don't know, make a startup company with some sort of new technique you've worked on. There's all sorts of things.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, a great way to end. Matthew, thank you. Welcome to Lion.
Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're going to be a great addition. I know it.
And, thank you.
And we thank you for joining us. Anything from you, Jason, before we wrap up?
No, I'm just probably might be in your chemistry class, so that's awesome. Gonna happen probably.
I'll be looking forward to it.
He's gonna be asking for the career pathways favor as always.
The 10 extra credit points for doing it.
He's gonna make you look fantastic
I'm gonna YouTube. Be asking real questions in class.
Awesome.
Well, real good. Well, thank you again.
Thank you.
And thank you to our audience for listening and watching the Career Pathways podcast. We never end a show without the vital question of where you can find the Career Pathways podcast. I'm looking. I think I found someone who has that answer. Yep. Jason.
So you can find the Career Pathways podcast on 99.97% of platforms, the same number of germs that get killed with Germex. So we're all over the web. We're everywhere. So,
Jason, he found that using AI, so it has
to
be true.
No, I didn't. This was before AI. This was before it was
pre-AI. Predates AI.
I predated AI on that one.
Oh, yeah. So it's even more true.
Yeah,
so
it has to be true, right? Because everything in the past is true.
So as they always say, trust us. But trust it.
The source was revealed to me in a dream. That's just the reality.
There you go. What a wonderful way to end. So thanks again for listening and watching the Career Pathways podcast. We'll have another podcast with another new faculty member next week. Take care. Bye.
This broadcast is sponsored in part by Lion College and by Kilt Studios.